we are now really checking on their processes and, hey, how can we automate it? Sometimes the solution can even be not with an agent because we can just build better IT systems that support your process and automate the flows.
It will have a completely different UX. It will not be for just sure. clicking. It will be a combination of clicking, next best action. So there will be some kind of a support agent.
People need to be involved and need to understand the output of the AI and take the right decision.
I mean, I disagree with you, but you said that Google is not, I mean, maybe in the last 1 year or two years, maybe they were not with the innovation at the forefront for some things.
The Boardroom Memo, powered by Netconomy.
Welcome back to the Boardroom Memo, the Netconomy podcast where we cut through the noise on enterprise technology and focus on what actually moves the needle. Today's topic, agentic AI, and the use case that deliver real ROI. We'll move past the hype of 2023 and 2024 into the agentic era of 2026. Joining me are two people who live this every day. Boban Ciordevic, our AI and data department lead, and Maximilian Zolnodic, our head of technical enablement. Let's get into it.
I would say when the ChatGPT got released, I think that the next year was a lot of this kind of POCs, so everybody wanted to do a POC, so it doesn't really matter about which topic, it's only about like, hey, I need an AI use case, I need to show this to somebody. But this led to having like POCs that really didn't prove to be successful. I think some kind of percentages is like extremely high, like 90-something%, like not being successful. But over the time, it's the customers also and the market changed a bit, so it's a bit more like, do we really need this? So it was POC era, then last year it was the agentic era. I still think that the whole value is not yet proven as it's like hype already. But yeah, this year, I think the expectations are really high. And I think the CEOs are a bit losing the patience of, you know, they would really like to have to find the value for that.
I mean, for me, where I see a lot of difference now is, in the beginnings, we had like this ChatGPT wrapper, which basically just used the API of ChatGPT and doing some nice system prompt on top. At the end, the value was quite limited to all of those applications. But now we are also going a bit deeper with agent architectures, basically, where we really hook into the core of the business or into our e-commerce shops and try to solve real issues and not just having something that you can throw in a chat at the end and get to the same result. For me also, as you said, the value is now a lot more asked and basically we are going a lot deeper into what can we actually achieve with this technology and not just hype around, in my opinion.
Exactly. And I think part of this story is also about like everybody was expecting like in few days you are done. So traditional machine learning, you need months, maybe you will get some value. And in this, I just create something in few hours, few days, I have it in a production, it's working, which is far from reality. So, and I think like many clients really were disappointed because maybe you can achieve something really fast in like a couple of days, but to productionalize this, to have this everything running in a secure environment, to add scale, to, you know, to serve the thousands of customers, I think this is, in the end, I think the complexity just shifted to the governance and the infrastructure and the microservice layer. Building agents is kind of easy. Of course, it still has challenges, but the things around it are still not less complex to the, you know, comparing to the traditional software development cycles.
Yeah, I think also that's what we experienced in the recent years, that building AI agents at the end is not far away from traditional software engineering. So we are started somewhere with machine learning engineers building machine learning models, but it turned out that LLMs are powerful enough in order to have a lot of use cases, I would say, covered without any touch of the machine learning model itself or the model itself. which is quite interesting.
Yeah, but also, I mean, at some point, I think in the beginnings, we had like use LLM for everything. So like don't even write a deterministic logic, just let the LLM do it. Exactly. And initially, if you just look at the results, I mean, LLM by nature are pretty confident what they're saying, and you're just like, oh, this is perfect. This works perfectly. I don't need to code anymore this stuff. But then when you dig under the hood, you see that it's completely like wrong, the results that it's spit out. So then we also had this kind of a deterministic workflows, which is still, I would say, the most important stuff, that we just really have a clear separation. What is a workflow? Where do I need determinism? Where do I need some LLM magic to actually get some data, which is not possible?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's something where I really discuss a lot with my engineers currently, because my engineers tend to do everything as deterministic as possible, and the LLM somewhere in the middle of the workflow, very tiny, very, very testable approach at the end. But I think this is also something we need to learn over the next projects. Where is the cut between deterministic workflows, and how free can we provide let the LLM run at the end in order to still get a good enough or the perfect output at the end?
I also think for the engineers, it also needs to be this kind of a mindset shift, because they're really used, as you say, for these deterministic workflows, also like coding in a way. I mean, this is maybe a separate topic for the vibe coding and stuff, but we recently had a situation where we had to build like the API services for prices and availability are not working. We are now waiting for the client for weeks to give us the access. And I was just like, why don't we just create a mock service and just vibe code this in like 1 hour and it doesn't really matter for the use case? And they were like, yeah, sure, we can do it, but please don't evaluate the code quality and don't judge me. Well, I don't care. We will just throw this away. Yeah. And when we get the API, we just integrate this and just do it like that.
I mean, I think that's for sure one way we need to find for ourselves, like, how much testable is something at the end, or how perfect does the code need to be? And when is it okay to just write throwaway products which you touch once or never?
Yeah, true. I mean, also I see, I mean, based on the Google Next that we attended, I mean, also Google is investing a lot into this whole agentic game, as everybody know. They now did this whole rebranding of Vertex AI to Agent Platform. So this is also like going in a direction which I was talking initially, like have the surrounding things around the agents as pluggable as possible in a way, so that you can just focus on agent building, and then you have agent registry, you had all the monitoring in place, all the stuff, because this is where the most time was spent. And also with their Google ADK, which is really integrated in their ecosystem, really in theory you can really fast deploy the agents and make them work at scale, and I really like their approach.
Yeah, especially what makes it really interesting is this scaling from pro code agents, where you can build everything, define everything, it's registered in the agent registry, but also the no code agents, which are on the Gemini Enterprise platform, built by our business users at the end, are registered there, and you can provide them access into every kind of GCP service, etc., which is the first time I personally see that we could probably bridge business user build and automations with actual engineering work in one platform.
How do you see the split in the future, in a way? How much would it be pro code? How much drag and drop and click and clack?
That will be interesting. I think there are many platforms currently going around, like N8N, things like that, where they are really interesting and business user try to get into it. But at the end, you still need a lot technical know-how in order to properly build such workflows and understand them. And since Google is now going into the direction to say, okay, we have an agent builder in Gemini Enterprise, but we want to keep it as simple as possible for business user to understand and use. And on the other hand, we have the Pro Code with Google ADK, the Agent Development Kit, where we can build nearly everything as engineers. I think it will be even like 70-30% a split, where 70% are most probably even the business users, because they know what they need, they know what they want to achieve, and they somehow can build it in their workflow with guidance probably, but they can build it. And 30% are really the difficult hard nuts we need to crack as engineers, where just it's not possible because the connectors are hard to achieve. We have still a lot of legacy software in our companies where we need to attach them, where no MCP server or anything is available. Or we have workflows that are just going over multiple steps with many involvement of other systems, where you need to prepare the context in a very, very refined way. And that won't be possible, I think, for any business user to achieve.
Yeah. True. I'm also thinking, I mean, there is a lot more and more requests that we see across the company about, you know, vibe coded apps, like small scale, only for my department or only for few people, which I think, I mean, we are talking about AI a lot, but in the end, we are all just want to, you know, make our people more productive or save costs or increasing efficiency and so on. With this vibe coded apps, I think there is also a huge potential in there, because not everything needs to be an agent in a way. Maybe somebody just vibe coded an app in 2-3 days, and we provide some kind of a platform where they can just easily deploy this and make accessible to users in a secure way and governed way. I think this would also bring this performance boost that we are all expecting also.
But don't you think we then push the people a bit away from their core work, actually? So they are now fumbling around with a lot of AI tooling and building apps for their work, but not doing their actual work. So what do you think? Is there any...
I think, I mean, how I see the people, I think there is a lot of motivation for people to try this out. I think many people are even experimenting this outside of work just because it's interesting. There are people who are really like natural born builders. So maybe they're not coders, but they like to build things.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, I'm not saying now that everybody should just do it in their free time. But in a way, if I now can invest 1 day, 2 days for 1 year to save for my department, I don't know, hours or days of work per person, I think in the end, that's the core benefit. Because in the end, I think during the software development, we had a lot of this kind of problems where developers don't really understand the client or the domain expert. Yeah. But now if we're bridging this gap and bringing the like capability for the domain expert to build the application, not really overblowing it like they are now spending months of building this, but something really small scale, which makes sense, that they can just easily deploy, it will provide a lot of value.
But for me, exactly that is also a bit the challenge we now have, because we have now technology where people that are by far not used to building software are capable to build something that provides value. That's fully true, and we saw it also in our company that this is now happening, or we see it actually. But still, the outcome of these tools or the how the tools are built is not what I would call production ready and something you should scale on the whole company and things like that. And I think this is something we are also currently working on with management and so on. We need to define a way on how to provide such tooling to the company. Because I think it's fine if you build such a tool and use it for your own. If it works for you, it's perfect at the end. Then maybe two or three other users see, okay, hey, someone built a very nice tool. How I also want to have it. Now you come into this deployment problem, I would call it. Like, you need to change your application that it works for multiple users. You need to deploy it on a platform that it's accessible. Probably you have a database somewhere flying around because you want to store the data and things like that. And then the things start to get difficult to achieve, especially for users that are not used to building such a software. And at this point, also, software engineers need to hook into this process, or operations engineers at least, to support and guide the people. And this is something where we are currently thinking about multi-tier projects, where you can say, okay, you have a small application, you want to have it for a few users, feel free, there's a platform deployed there with some README or whatever. Yeah. You will figure it probably out. But if you want to scale it to a company level, you most probably still need some engineering work in order to make it multi-tenant, capable, and scale it at the end.
Yeah, true. I mean, for the company scale, that for sure cannot live within one department and on one person, because there is also so many things to consider. I mean, with these smaller apps, I think all of them, even like on a lead level, like, I don't know, engineering leads have some alignments about the staffing. This is still used really like in Excel. Yeah. They're filling this out, populating all this stuff. And in for these five people, if they can do these things automatically, just a nice UI where they click and collect things and they can just make it visible. Of course, they can think about the agents doing this for them. But I think this is even the next level, and we should really try to see what am I trying to achieve before I really introduce an agent to do this for me, fully automated end-to-end.
But I think this is also where the companies are quite stuck currently, because we currently have the promise in the market like, hey, just build an agent, it will solve it for you. But for building an agent, we need to have data foundation. And in addition, we also need to understand the human process in order to build up those capabilities. And this is, I think, where most of the companies currently are stuck in the process of figuring out. And also, we staffing process is, I think, one of the best examples in our company, because it's very human driven. We have department leads that understand how what people we have in this whole department, and we have a lot of discussions until one of our projects is staffed to find the best possible way for the project at the end. And there are many attributes included in this process, like, okay, what are the skills of the employee? What is the situation of the project the employee is currently in? What is the situation of the project the employee will be shifted to? Do we have location-specific restrictions? Do we have language-specific restrictions?
Motivation of the employee.
Motivation of the employee, exactly. Things like that. And this makes it hard, because we need, in order to build an agent that can do it, we need to have this data somehow available. So we need to provide it. And this is really hard, because it's in the brain of the people and not somewhere in our systems right now.
Yeah, true. I mean, also, you know, customers now are getting smarter, of course, and they would like to have like a concrete KPIs behind everything. Okay, how much of a performance boost will I get if I get this agent? But exactly what you said, they're not even currently tracking how much time do they spend. So if we take a simple example, like, I don't know, recruiting, and how much HR is spending on the first screening phase, we would like to maybe introduce an agent that is doing the CV screening and then giving advices to the HR, maybe doing some kind of a, you know, not even grading, but some kind of a helper for the HR. We don't even know how much time we spend now. And people are many companies are not even tracking, and they're now expecting, okay, please, you need to promise us, we expect a KPI of 20% of performance boost, which is always like a, you know, chicken and egg problem. We should not stop the innovation before we get all the data right, but still it needs to somehow make sense, because in the end, we are just ending up in a gut feeling. This will probably help me. Did it really help? We don't know. We think it is. Some people think it doesn't. So, yeah.
But for me, it's also interesting to see, because this is, I would say, the first time, at least, that I saw that companies are trying to push so much for return of investment. Because in earlier days or before AI basically started, there was a project, we built some features and barely looked at KPIs or thought about, okay, what are the KPIs we will measure as soon as we implement this feature. And now every agent use case is basically, okay, but how much more efficient can we get now with that? And
That's also what goes into the mind of people.
Exactly. Yeah. That's also what we saw with one of our customers, where we started building up agents for internal processes. And the first thing was, okay, what is the efficiency gain we get? And we really needed to ask the customer first, okay, how efficient are you currently? And the question, the answer is, most of the time, we don't know.
It's
really the fun thing.
Exactly. I mean, also, interesting how when you go into this kind of a workshops and everything, so when you are discussing about the process, how much people you need to understand the process end to end, even the people from the same department, it's hard really to drill this. Okay, this is how the whole flow looks and people are often, I think, also surprised on the workshops when they get the full process driven, the like design and drawn. They're like confused that this looks like that.
Also, but still, what I really like is that we now somehow started to think about process efficiency and how we can automate more and more processes with actually computer systems. Because every company uses computers and IT systems, and many of our bigger customers, or all of them actually, have ERP systems where you think a bit about automation. But now we are also heading into different other departments, like marketing, where we are now really checking on their processes and, hey, how can we automate it? Sometimes the solution can even be not with an agent, because we can just build better IT systems that support your process and automate the flows.
Yeah, sure. Do you see more potential in this kind of internal use cases when it comes to the agents and AI?
Compared to
for the clients, like for our industry, for example, for the retail business, for the end consumer, or more on the internal efficiency gains?
I think jumping into AI for retailers and our e-commerce shops is something we cannot and should not avoid. This is something you need to do. I think Daniel mentioned it in the podcast recently. He also said, this is something that will just happen, and the companies need to jump on this train in order to survive and also to continue selling products at the end. For here, the efficiency gain is most probably on the end customer side. Researching products, things like that.
Or experience, maybe better experience.
Better experience, yes. But there is also a huge potential when it comes to internal process automation with AI. And sometimes I tend to say it's also easier to start with, because if you have an e-commerce shop and you serve that to a few thousand clients every day, building an AI agent that is bulletproof, I think we have a lot of cases where this didn't work out well. But internally, you have your trusted user base, basically, and you can also scale and try it out and find use cases that are small enough in order to start building, gain experience, and then can scale bigger in order to really have an end-to-end flow. So I, since also from my natural role as automating our own company, I see a lot of potential and also use cases internally. And I tend to say, start internally, gain experience, because it's a safe environment, and then we can always scale to the end customers.
Yeah. I also think that somehow customers or organizations in general tend to be a bit too, how to say it, like they're looking for the golden AI use case that will enable them days of increased efficiency across the organization. But I think if you just, and they just get lost into this kind of a search for this use case, for this golden use case, which doesn't really, I mean, maybe it exists, but until you find it, until you implement it, probably it's something much more sophisticated and it requires time. If you are just focusing on small gains, maybe these departments say a few days, this for some other use case, few days, on smaller things, these things add up. In the end, you will achieve much more than just running around in circles, having a pool of 50 use cases and asking yourself, okay, what, which one should I pick? I don't know.
Yeah, and the interesting part here is we are always looking at use cases from processes we are currently doing. And I think internally we have a very interesting project in agent areas where we actually built an agent for process which was before not possible to achieve and not working because it took so much time in order to do it that we actually didn't really fully do it. So what we did is we have in our pre-sales area the problem that we are faced with a lot of company names, basically. And we have somehow an understanding what our ideal customer is. So basically we know, okay, a customer is on a certain range of revenue, it has a certain structure, and it has a certain technology portfolio, then it's a good fit for us. And now you're faced with 1,000 and more customer names, and you need to choose what customer might be the next best customer for us. Something that is not achievable or not easily achievable in with just human work. And so that's why we basically choose customers based on personal connections to certain customers, but did not really go into data-driven selection of the next best customer. And this was the first use case we actually did with an agent now, where we then said, okay, we can now do something like deep researching with an agent in a matter of minutes instead of someone researching over days for a single customer. So what we really achieved is we can provide the agent a list of names, 100, 200, and the agent can come back in a few hours with a completely scored, ranked list of potential customers, which is shaped for the needs we have on our customers. And this is something we were not able to do before. And even with AI help, it took us a month in order to get to such a list before. And now that we are really able to say, okay, we have a new list, 100 customers, throw it into the system. The agents go on a deep research journey in different areas and put in a new scoring for compared to the existing list. And we know, okay, those are the 100 next best customers for us. And this was really an interesting journey for us because it was, first of all, the first journey we did on Google ADK. And second, the first really big agent system we built. And it turned out to be actually quite successful because we now can do something in hours, which was not possible to do in months now.
What is in the end the feedback from the salespeople? I mean, I don't know how deeply are we evaluating then these results. I mean, of course, you cannot really cross-check everything, but at least for the customer that you kind of already know, you can just skim to the list of, I don't know, key stakeholders, key technologies, and see if there is some hallucinations in there or not.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, it's not perfect. We're still talking about deep research and AI systems. It's not perfect, but it's good enough to give us an indication where we could look into it next. And it's also good enough to have comparable results between the customers, potential customers, which we have. So for us, it's a very valuable system already. Also the sales, it was in very, very near collaboration with the sales department. And also they told us this is really valuable already to continue. And we also agreed together with management that we will invest more into it, actually.
But I'm also often asking myself, like, what means good enough, and when does it you could stop, in a way? Because in the end, you can improve this indefinitely.
Exactly.
And when, and
exactly.
Until when you say, okay, let's pause it for now, let's continue in if the technology gets a bit better and so on. So
yeah.
How do you see that?
I think good enough in this case, for example, is if we can do a decision on what are we going to do with this list next. And we also said, okay, now we can introduce more third-party API integrations, like providing LinkedIn data, providing more techography data, like we really know that this customer is using SAP, CRM products, things like that. But at some point, we also figured out, okay, we know it from Googling.
Yeah.
Because that's what deep research does. It goes to Google, tries to find a match between a company and the technologies that are relevant for us. And most of the time, it works at the end. And this is also where we need to understand where to make this cut, because at some point we say, okay, we now have this 100 customers, we want to approach them in some way, and then the actual work of our sales department starts, because you then need to understand the customer, you need to find context, you need to get in touch with them. And this is also where the people need to start researching on their own as well, because this understanding is not by just getting AI output at the end.
Yeah.
It's really like investing time into this customer or a potential customer.
Yeah. I guess it's also like, you know, until the 80% you get pretty fast.
Yeah.
Then the remaining next 10% is kind of difficult, and the next 10 is even more difficult. And I guess also it's on the management and the CEOs to decide, okay, when is the border? And I think also now it will go a bit into this kind of, what you say, new features, but to evaluate why do we need it and what do we expect to gain from it? Because maybe, you know, I think customers and organizations can really go into this kind of a trap. Let's try to get something more. But if you now need to invest additional, I don't know, 1 month to get a fraction of a percent of increase, does it really make sense? Maybe in this case, skimming through LinkedIn, if we don't have it, could potentially make sense. But if we want now to go in, I don't know, social networks to see what the companies are discussing about, all of this stuff, maybe in there is not a huge value compared to some other topics. So it has to be prioritized.
Also, we should not go into the trap to say we want to replace people here.
No.
That's not the goal. We want to augment the people, and their 80% with AI is most probably the right fit, because the last 20% is the percentage basically where people need to be involved and need to understand the output of the AI and take the right decisions. Because overall, if we would provide AI decisions fully to AI, I don't know if a company would survive at the end. Because also there are multiple studies around, could an AI lead a whole company and manage a whole company? And we are not at this point, I would say.
Yeah, I think it cannot even at this stage really, maybe some specific roles, of course. But in the end, I think the biggest fear of people, realistic fear, in my opinion, would be like my role will change and I will do some things differently.
Yeah.
And maybe this differently, I don't like it. Yeah. Because, for example, maybe I would like, if I'm doing like, I'm if I'm a designer, right? And I was enjoying working in a Photoshop, doing everything manually, all the layers, all the image changing and so on. For now, I think we still, people like for a professional grade image generation, you still need to use Photoshop, but now it's different. Now you have AI, you circle this, say, I need to change this, please move this around.
Right.
This is a bit of a different work. And I think some people, maybe it's not the best example, but I think some people are also reluctant to go in this direction because they like their job. Also, we had like, you know, people browsing through, you know, to the website, looking for some sources and materials and trying to get into this kind of a creative mode. Mm. But now AI already did this for you in a way because it has access to all of your data. And then if you just ask the question, you would get probably like 90% good response and it will be different. But some people maybe have a joy of going deep into different websites, reading to the blogs, investigating the topics and so on. So this, I think it's a big bit of a mindset shift also for people that is needed.
But for me, it's like this going deep into a topic. This is also sometimes, at least for me, the necessary part in order to get a real understanding of the matter. So I don't know, I'm into mountain biking. If I would just throw things into AI, deep research, whatever, for the next best mountain bike, I will most probably not understand the geometry of the frame, what forks are very well currently, things like that. And this is something, if you have a hobby or something like that, you most probably want to jump into that. And that's where I think also sometimes you just need to go deep and do it on your own in order to fully understand it. But sometimes if I'm not into that, like, I don't know, coffee machines, I'm not into the coffee machine so much. So I just want to have a coffee machine that makes my coffee in the morning. Then I would just use deep research because, hey, what's the best price for the best coffee machine I can get? Let's go with it.
Yeah, I mean, my workflow is a bit different, for example, because I'm into coffee machines, for example, and I like to use deep research, but just as the initial trigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go deeper and deeper into these topics. Maybe it can happen that I don't even open a website for that. Maybe see different, what tools do I need to make a perfect espresso? So I see I need a portafilter, then I will continue the interaction with the AI to ask things about that. So in my way to understand what is relevant, also maybe I will trigger another deep research to look at it.
Mm.
I mean, I'm losing maybe, you know, all the nice images and different stuff, but in a way, I also save a bit of time not going through some content, which is, there is always like boilerplate content in all of these blog posts and informations and so on. So I just take it as a different medium, for example.
So you're trusting AI deep enough that the answers are correct enough, let's say it like that, because it won't be 100.
I mean, if it's something really important for me, which, I don't know, it's about safety or something like that, I, for example, tend to also, you know, trigger a deep research focused only on like scientific publications and things around that. And based on that, you get also a feeling that this is much more correct. Because if you're just focused on the blog posts, anybody can write a blog post.
That
I mean,
true,
also for the research, that also can be true because there are many researchers which don't really make sense. There are maybe some, you know, tested on 100 people, but also if it's really, really important, then I go and I open the publication, skim to the abstract for different, see also not every scientific paper is equal in its like references. So but that's already maybe too deep, but I think we went a bit off the topic in general. But what do you see like for the clients? Like, what are the main use cases they are interested in?
I think since we are coming from traditional e-commerce, most of the clients until now approached us for e-commerce features. and agentic commerce at the end, which is very relevant, and we also need to be experts and gain a lot more knowledge in that area. But now I have the feeling, and you are also involved in many of the, or all of the projects actually, the clients are really now coming also with internal automation, internal agentic workflows. Where can we hook? And also there, I have the feeling clients really ask for guidance.
Yeah.
I don't know what's your feeling on, I mean, on that.
For sure. We also had recently a situation where a client had like really nicely identified use cases.
Yeah.
There is even some kind of indication of, you know, costs or expected effort saving and stuff like that. But it's like 50 use cases. And, you know, I mean, this is also done between the departments. So, I mean, in theory, you can have some kind of a ranking list.
Yeah.
But to really properly evaluate the impact, I think this is where they need our support most often. So even we even had that situations where, you know, we are not maybe that deep into organization, but just because of our experience, we're just looking at the use cases and like just challenging this from our perspective. We really see something, what will work, what will not work, maybe something where technology is not ready yet, maybe something that they can just use a tool, they don't need to build a custom use case. So, and in a lot of cases, I think there is also this kind of a struggle. Do I need a chatbot or do I need a workflow?
Yeah.
Do I really need this chat experience?
Exactly. And especially this chat experience is something, yeah, okay, we have large language models, which are language models. So the chat experience is quite the natural thing to start with. But also here, I think we now need to learn on how to get a bit away from this whole chat experience and providing a better, more human-friendly interface. Because I think every one of us is a bit bored of reading through all these AI messages. I think there is even a trend called AI fatigue, where you get really, really tired actually of reading through it. And there are many AI vendors that are now looking into different approaches on integrating AI output or providing AI output.
I think that the number one use case that I see that the clients in our industry are interested is chatbots.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes there is not even a vision behind what this chatbot will provide to me, because there is still not a proven value. I mean, there are numbers, you know, 20% of conversion rates and all of this stuff, but you can never, you need to put all of this into a context to really see, does it make sense for me as an organization or not? And somehow it's a bit natural because also the competition, hey, maybe my competitor also now has a chatbot. I need to have a chatbot. Do I really need it? Is my search, for example, regular search, working? Is my product data ready for this? Because if you have 10 attributes for each product and no descriptions, the chatbot cannot help you. I mean, it can guide you a bit, but if you ask any kind of a specific questions, hey, I'm looking for a dress which is good for a wedding and has some kind of a luxury vibe, if there is nothing mentioned in the product data, chatbot is not magical to just, you know, do the stuff. Of course, we can now discuss about, okay, we now trigger a Google search, we find the data, but this is like overcomplicated.
Yeah, sure. And especially we should not compensate bad data with more bad data, because Googling can also go horrible wrong at the end.
We had, I mean, when it comes to Googling and bad data, I mean, we had in the beginnings, like really few cool use cases, which are around product data enrichment.
Yeah.
We also have for one client, like implemented in production, like product description generator based on the attributes. But also this is where they have a flexibility to do some kind of a configurations, tone of voice, style. So it's not just a simple block of text. It's really quite complicated. And this is already something which will give them additional boost. But also when it comes to like really researching the product attributes, because many customers are really struggling to get this, I don't know, 20, 30 attributes per product. They don't even know where to start. Some companies simply don't want to invest time because it's definitely time consuming. But for some other companies, it takes a massive amount of time just because it's a simple workflow. You get a new iPhone. If your supplier didn't provide you exactly the attributes, they are Googling this or reading through materials and saying, okay, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. It's an error-prone and time-consuming process, and we got some use cases in a POC stage where you can do a deep research about the product attributes. Maybe sometimes there will be a clash for one attribute, and you need to select as a human which of them makes sense. You will get the references, and you will probably believe more the official iPhone website than some local dealer. And this is something which I think provides even better value. The problem with this use case is, for example, when we build it, the connection with the actual enterprise system. Because currently how we build it, it was working in isolation.
Yeah.
You can really do it nicely and have it exported maybe in CSV. But since the whole human in the loop thing, you need to validate, to see, to check some stuff because it cannot be fully automated yet. This is where then the real investment comes in, because building this kind of an agent is easier than having it integrated end-to-end when I accept this, that it's already in my PIM, that it's already on my website. So this is where the complexity also somehow it's hidden, but it's huge.
Especially this human in the loop problem, I would even call it, is still something we need to figure it out when to pull the human into the AI process. But for me, that's a very interesting use case because if, first of all, you have work that is very manual and requires a lot of time in order to get these attributes right. And the second thing is, if you have your attributes right, most probably your search will also work better. You have already in your shop, and also your SEO ranking as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, the right way to think about AI features. Not, hey, well, everyone else has this chatbot, I also need a chatbot. More like, where can we really make a difference for us, for our customers at the end.
Yeah.
Also, we had one customer that was kind of bored of the chat interface, and then we also here in a POC build up a system that recommends order improvements, order efficiency improvements.
Like a next best action or something.
Yeah, exactly. And this was also quite interesting because we hooked it completely different into the interface. We did not provide any chat-like interface for now. We just said, okay, you're on the cart. We know you're buying different other stuff from time to time. Maybe you also want to add that to the cart now. Or you're ordering in different clusters the same product, maybe you want to combine it in order to save delivery costs or handling costs. And I think that's also a smart way of thinking about AI features. Where can we provide the feature to the customer and not get the customer into the AI at the end?
True. But there are also customers on the opposite side of the spectrum where they're like, I don't like the chat as it is. In a way, there is a chat bubble. I click in here, I get a small thing. I would like to have like a half of the page now in a chat interface. I mean, I think the full page. I think also in the future, probably the way how do we interact with the web shops will be quite different. You know, maybe we will get into some kind of this is just my expectation potentially, or in the next 2 years, that it will have a completely different UX. it will not be for just sure. clicking. It will be a combination of clicking, next best action. So there will be some kind of a support agent or somebody who is like from the AI observing what we do, providing next best action. I can ask questions. It can recommend products for me. So I think this whole dynamic UI changing and shifting, this is somehow a future. Let's see if we get there and how soon that will come. But that could be quite interesting.
I think we should start building a prototype, just providing a prompt box, nothing else, and then let's see how well this.
yeah. But now we also saw this whole training of the models with the cursor, so that it can do actions for you. Yeah. So in a way, with a cursor voice and not even text, maybe Neuralink, and then we just
exactly
browse and shop our stuff.
But maybe. For sure, this will be a lot stronger. Like just talking to Siri on your iPhone, recommending products, things like that. Yeah. This is for sure a much stronger sales potential in the future.
How do you see in general like the Google position in this whole AI game? And are we on the right track betting on Google?
It's always a back and forth, I would say, when it comes to selecting a vendor, because sometimes vendors are much upfront in this game, like OpenAI was at the very beginning. Now people or companies are a lot nearer or even before OpenAI. But what I also saw on Google Next is that Google has a solid foundation, I would say, and we are also early adopters of this whole platform. We jumped on the platform right at the beginning, and we also saw the evolution over the years now. And Google was maybe or is very often not the first one to provide something. There are also Anthropic and so on the market, but Google was always providing capabilities on a solid level where we can also count on them. Mm. And also with Google ADK, Gemini Enterprise and so on, and also the CX stack now, we have really a platform where we can fulfill, I would say, 90% of the customers' needs.
Mm.
Either with just configuring the products or building it on the platform.
Yeah. I mean, I disagree with you, but you said that Google is not, I mean, maybe there are, in the last 1 year or two years, maybe they were not with the innovation at the forefront for some things. If you take a look at Nano Banana, for example, this was a game changer everybody. This is like sooner. With LLMs, you know, over the course of the last 15 years, they were always, in my opinion, the innovators. If you compare to some other companies like Microsoft or AWS, I mean, all the AI innovation came from Google. Transformers, it came from them. So all the topics. I think they made a mistake. Maybe they took this whole LLM game a bit too lightly in the beginning. And I think the whole size of the organization was something which was blocking them to be there at the forefront. So OpenAI recognized the opportunity. They had a smaller team, much leaner, as smart as on Google, but they didn't have like this whole, you know, anchor of the big organization that stops innovation.
Fully agree on that point. Also, we always need to understand that Google is not a small scale startup. And also people at Google told us they have never seen such a dramatic shift as it now happened with AI, basically in their organization, because every part of the organizations there is going into AI, which is really interesting. And also they always proved us that they can deliver in form of LLMs with Gemini 3, 3.1. The models are a lot better and comparable with any competitor on the market like OpenAI and Anthropic models.
I mean, they also have it like end-to-end in a way. They close the loop because they have GPUs. They are deeply integrated into ecosystems across the world. Yeah. they have talented people and they have money. So in a way, I really think they're on a good track, and I'm happy that we are like their partners. But maybe, I mean, compared to SAP and this whole collaboration, because we are also SAP partner, how do you see the this collaboration? When it's good to use Google, when it's good to use SAP?
Exactly. I think SAP will always be needed and strong in their product area, like ERP, CX, and so on. And for me, it's not we do one or we do another. It will be a good synergy at the end. So we can build very, very good working and customer tailored agents on Google and connect it hopefully with SAP at the end. And SAP knows how to interact with their systems. So with protocols like A2A, things might have a very, very well working synergy in future.
Yeah, exactly. Because I also think that in the future, building agents will not be that difficult. In the end, as SAP, let's be honest, came into the AI game a bit late, but they're catching up. I mean, I was last year in the SAP Tech Head, they announced all of this, you know, openness, agentic platform also on their end. So I think, as you said, through A2A and this collaboration between the agents, in the end, we'll probably have some kind of a agentic pool of agents across different mediators that we don't even in the end need to do all of these big data pipelines across different systems and so on. So maybe, let's see, maybe the agents will, you know, interact between each other and just exchange the information, because in the end you just need something. Maybe for your agent, you still need a textual response.
Yeah.
If you instruct the agent to hook in directly to the database or ask another agent, in the end, nobody cares as long as you get the final outcome there.
That is right. But at the end, well, we need to find, I think, a good way to talk to our clients and provide them a way of getting into this agentic game.
I mean, we have in general like this whole approach depending on where the customer starts. Are there already some kind of a use cases that are defined, or they are completely clueless where to start, or maybe they already have a department or area of business where actually they would like to start with the AI use cases? And we have this kind of a structured workshops where we are really drilling into asking a lot of whys, really trying to get this business value out of this. First, of course, focusing on the business problems, because I think this is often the case where, you know, maybe there is an AI tool, maybe there is some kind of a idea, but if you don't know the problem that you are trying to solve, and if you don't track the data, how much it is of a big of a problem, and if it can be improved by AI, you are already like starting without a vision, and there is no guarantee that you will actually succeed. And on these workshops, we have a lot of interesting discussions and how people see these things differently. Also, you know, challenging, is the data available? Challenging also if the technology is ready. You know, sometimes maybe they're over creative. This is where, you know, maybe the technology is not ready yet or, you know, because they still see it as a magic thing and magic box that can do everything what they like.
I think this is also a bit the hype that has been produced around AI. And this is also our task to do at the client, to ground them, basically guide them through and but also be realistic. Like, not everything will be possible, but a lot more will be possible now.
Exactly. But it's also funny because sometimes we end up in the thing that for this specific problem, we don't need AI at all.
Yeah,
it's a simple deterministic flow programmatically that can be done, integration between systems, and that's it.